Coming up, Lucky Severson takes us to Hamtramck, Michigan, where the majority of the city council is now Muslim. Also, poet and activist Wendell Berry on simple farming as a spiritual calling.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding also provided by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're your retirement company.
Welcome, I'm Bob Abernethy. It's good to have you with us. President Obama reached out to American Muslims with an impassioned speech this week at a Baltimore mosque. In his first visit to a mosque in the United States, Obama reassured Muslims they have a place in America. The president also implicitly criticized Republican presidential candidates by condemning anti-Muslim rhetoric.
If you're ever wondering whether you fit in here, let me say it as clearly as I can. As president of the United States, you fit in here, right here. You're right where you belong. You're part of America, too.
While various religious leaders praised the president's speech, some Muslims took to social media to criticize a president they say should have done more sooner. Meanwhile, in Washington, a coalition of American Muslim groups joined with other Western Muslim leaders to announce a new joint council. It will combat issues of common concern to Muslims, such as anti-Muslim prejudice and violent extremism. On Thursday, Obama attended his last annual National Prayer Breakfast as president. He gave what some observers called his most Christian address to date. Speaking on the theme of fear, Obama said he has experienced many times of fear during his presidency, but he added, quote, Jesus is a good cure for fear. This year's keynote speakers were Hollywood power couple producer Mark Burnett and his wife, actress Roma Downey. They talked about their faith-based TV and film projects. Religious leaders are among those grappling with how best to respond to the Zika virus, which is rapidly spreading throughout Latin America. The World Health Organization has declared the virus a global public health emergency. Experts have linked the virus to cases of microcephaly, babies born with small heads and underdeveloped brains. Some officials have provoked controversy by suggesting that until the virus is contained, Latin American women should not become pregnant. The outbreak has also reinvigorated a debate on the restrictive abortion laws in Brazil and other countries. Ahead of his upcoming trip to Mexico, Pope Francis denounced corruption, violence, and drug trafficking there. In a video message, he said Mexico was living in its own type of war, and he would use his visit to pray for the gift of peace. The Pope is scheduled to land in Mexico next Friday. He'll visit some of the country's poorest and most violent regions. Francis is also scheduled to stop in Cuba on his way to Mexico for a historic meeting with the leader of the Russian Orthodox Church. The meeting is an attempt to heal the 1,000-year-old schism that divided Christianity between East and West. Israel's government has announced it will allow non-Orthodox Jewish prayer at Jerusalem's Western Wall. The government said it plans to build a $9 million plaza for mixed-gender prayer at the wall. The plaza will be next to the Orthodox prayer plaza, but separate from it. Some hailed the move, calling it a historic recognition of the country's long marginalized non-Orthodox Jewish believers. But others said the measure did not go far enough. This week of President Obama's first visit to a U.S. mosque, Lucky Severson takes us to the city of Hamtramck, Michigan, just outside Detroit. Hamtramck, once staunchly Polish Catholic, is now the only city in the U.S. with a Muslim majority city council.
All right, everybody, this is the last round, the round you've all been waiting for.
This is a monthly quiz show at the Hamtramck Moose Lodge.
Everybody got their notes.
They call it Ham Trivia Night.
Which Hamtramck bar still has a Prohibition-era tunnel visible from the bathroom?
Hamtramck is a very lively, welcoming town.
Hamtramck's a small town within the city of Detroit, working class town with an intact downtown, walkable, cool and funky.
Karen Majeski is Hamtramck's part-time mayor, plus she works for the University of Michigan and owns a vintage clothing store that's, well, also cool and funky. It's right on Main Street. Hamtramck has a population of about 22,000, considerably smaller than it used to be. It's a town that grew up and almost died with the auto industry. In the 1970s, 90% of the population was Catholic and Polish. It was called Little Warsaw. Even today, some masses are delivered in Polish. But if those Polish immigrants from long ago could visit Hamtramck today, they'd find it quite different. Now Hamtramck is 51% Muslim. There are immigrants here from Bosnia, Albania, Bangladesh, Yemen, and Syria. Hamtramck made international news after the November election when it became the only city in the U.S. with a Muslim-majority city council. Saad Ambasmari is the newest councilman.
You've got the biggest percentage, right?
Yes, because I knocked all the doors in Hamtramck. I asked all the people to vote for me, and people voted for me, Muslims and non-Muslims.
Ambasmari first moved here from his home in Yemen 6 years ago.
I was married to an American citizen lady. She brought me here. I got my citizenship. I'm going to school. She's going to school. My kids going to school. We're doing fine. We found ourselves American. Here we are. Now we have to serve this country as American.
As an American and a Muslim. Hamtramck made the headlines in part because of the fear that exists in some parts of the country about Muslims, those among us, and those who want to immigrate here.
I mean, we roll our eyes in Hamtramck when we hear that kind of talk. I mean, sure, people talk about it, but basically, you know, the issues within the city are great, we have a new council. Are they going to fix the potholes on my street, you know?
Is that Roosevelt?
Roosevelt was a very, very well-liked president here, and he did a lot for Hamtramck.
Greg Kowalski is a director of the Hamtramck Historical Museum. He says his town has always been diverse. There are 27 languages spoken within these 2 square miles. And he knows about the fears of immigrants taking over.
100 years ago, we would be talking not about the Muslims moving in here, but about the Polish people moving here, and we would be German because they were original settlers here.
Kowalski says Hamtramck has always been in the headlines. It was once the home of the Dodge Main auto manufacturing plant that employed 45,000 laborers. Back in 1987, when Pope John Paul II visited Michigan, the first place he toured was Hamtramck.
A lot of people felt that that was possibly the greatest day in Hamtramck's history because he was here, right down the street. That's pretty cool.
Now only about 11% of Hamtramck is Catholic, but recently the Archbishop of Detroit, Alan Bignaron, publicly reminded his priests that they need to take a stand against those who would restrict Muslim immigrants because of their religion.
We expect everyone to show respect to our religious liberty. We need to share that with others. This is one of the great foundation stones of American life, the First Amendment, religious liberty. We speak for it. We need to stand for it for one another.
It's not that everyone here is okay with the Muslim influx, but finding critics on the streets of Hamtramck is not easy. Joan Barrios and Twyla Meyer have lived most of their days in Hamtramck.
Well, I think most of the people who talk against it are people who don't really know anything else, that they'll talk against anything.
I think it's more like talk behind closed doors, fears, real real genuine fears that people have from fear-mongering that goes on, you know, the anti-Muslim fear-mongering.
Right.
A lot of people listen to Fox News.
Right.
It scares people.
One of the more worrisome issues here is the increasing number of mosques, like the one behind me. Michigan state law says you can't sell alcohol within 500 feet of a school, church, or mosque. That could be problematic. Hamtramck has a long, close relationship with alcohol, dating back through Prohibition.
My Lord. In Prohibition in Hamtramck was an opportunity. And it was an opportunity that almost everybody took advantage of. There were hundreds of speakeasies, brothels, bars, you name it.
This is number six. Which bar has been converted into a mosque?
The answer is one bar has been converted into a mosque, and that's one of six mosques in the area. The biggest fear nationwide seems to be that if Muslims take over, they will institute Sharia law. Saad Al-Mazmari, the new city councilman, says Sharia won't happen here.
I am telling you here, I am American. My roof gonna be the U.S. Constitution and the state and the city law.
At a recent call to prayer, the imam was delivering a powerful sermon about family values. One point he stressed in particular, parents should pay more attention to helping their children and less attention to Facebook. Samir Al-Rushton spends much of the day with his seven kids escorting them to and from school. They all attend. Education is very important. Samir and his family arrived here just a few months ago. They are refugees who managed to escape the horror of Syria.
How do you say thank you?
Shukran.
When he was growing up, Bashar Imam was a Syrian citizen. Now he's an American, helping families like Samir's resettle. He was translating for us.
When they start hearing about the raping of the woman, is the straw that broke the camel's back, and they decided to flee. Yes.
Bashar has become a successful businessman who is exasperated with the attitude of some of his, as he says, fellow Americans.
Once I close the door on my own house, the Constitution of the United States of America protects me practicing religion the way I want to. Sharia or otherwise, I could worship the cat. That is my right as an American, and the Constitution says so.
It was the calls to prayer from the mosque that started the first pushback in Hamtramck, particularly from senior citizens.
Especially when you live right across the street from it or right next door to it. But then that's the same thing about the bells. You know, if you live right next door to the bells, you have a different opinion
you mean
of them
next door to a,
from
to
the
a
church.
Christian church.
Yeah.
So most of the furor over the Muslim majority city council seems to have come from outside Hamtramck, not from within.
Sometimes we in here in our community wondering what is the rest of the country thinking, because we have had situations where people say they're afraid to come here. They say, how can you live like that with these different people? These are nice people. They're our neighbors. They're part of our community. We're part of their community. And the things we hear, sometimes they're outrageous.
I know there's been a lot of media attention over the last few months.
The word in Hamtramck is that the jury is still out on the Muslim majority city council and will be until the potholes are filled or not. For Religion and Ethics News Weekly, I'm Lucky Severson in Hamtramck, Michigan.
For many environmentalists, there's hardly any name more revered than that of Wendell Berry, the 81-year-old farmer, writer, mystic, and poet. For nine generations, he and his family have been tending their share of earth, thanking God for it, and railing at the corporate interests that could threaten it. Now, to preserve the kind of agriculture they prize and urge everyone else to adopt, the Berries have decided to partner with St. Catherine's, a Catholic liberal arts college founded by the Dominican Sisters of Peace. Our correspondent, Judy Valente, reports.
The farm fields and rolling knobs of central Kentucky.
This is the landscape that inspires Wendell Berry's work as an award-winning poet, fiction writer, and essayist. In one of his rare TV interviews, Berry, seen here in 2013 with Bill Moyers, read his poem, The Peace of Wild Things.
When despair for the world grows in me, I go and lie down where the wood drake rests in his beauty on the water, and the great heron feeds.
The Berry family has lived in these parts for 9 generations. While pursuing a prolific writing career, Berry, like his ancestors, continued caring for this land as a farmer. The 81-year-old writer and his family now seek to pass on their farming legacy to a new generation. They've chosen to do that not through any large university agricultural program, but at this small Catholic liberal arts college about an hour's drive from Louisville, run by the Dominican Sisters of Peace.
It's probably the most unlikely place that the berry farming program could have ended up.
Why is that?
Well, because we're so small, because we're so rural, because we're not famous. But those are the characteristics that the Berry family appreciates and promotes.
The Dominican Sisters have been part of this community since 1822, teaching and farming on their own 550-acre stretch of land. That meant a lot to Wendell Berry's daughter, Mary.
Their first question to me was not about my father's reputation and how it might serve their desire to raise funds.
Well, the Dominican Sisters of Peace work out of 4 pillars, prayer, study, community, and ministry.
The first question at St. Catherine to me was, how does your work fit with the 4 pillars of the Dominican life?
Berry, whose writings often explore the connection between the natural world and the human spirit, proved a good fit for the sisters, too.
I come into the presence of still water, and I feel above me the day-blind stars waiting with their light. For a time, I rest in the grace of the world and am free.
Wendell Berry is a deeply soulful man. He lives his life out of deep spiritual convictions and has a love for people, particularly simple people who are trying to build a relationship with the natural world.
The Berry Farming Program at St. Catherine's offers a unique interdisciplinary approach to agriculture, combining fieldwork with philosophy, studies in agricultural science and agribusiness with classes on literature, history, and culture. Leah Bayens is the program's coordinator.
When Wendell says things like you can't take the culture out of agriculture, ultimately I think what he means is that you can't minimize it into an equation or minimize it into one particular scientific study.
For Berry, the heart of agriculture springs from a spiritual kinship with the land.
We have the world to live in and the use of it to live from on the condition that we will take good care of it.
It makes an ethical and spiritual relationship to land stewardship the center point, not something out on the periphery.
It's a belief about the land Berry laid out in a 2012 lecture called It All Turns on Affection that he delivered after receiving a National Endowment for the Humanities Medal for his lifetime of work.
To have a sense of affection for one another and for the non-living beings, that's what we're trying to instill as a goal for our students.
That's why practices in soil stewardship are a major part of the Berry program, as are classes like this one in eco-spirituality taught by religion studies professor Matt Brandstetter.
He's really great at bringing out the spirituality of what would otherwise seem like very simple, mundane, everyday tasks, but looked upon with the right attitude, they're a kind of living mysticism.
I still consider myself a person who takes the Gospels very seriously. A lot of my writing, I think, has been when it hadn't been in defense of precious things, has been a giving of thanks for precious things.
Mary Berry says the trend over the past century toward ever bigger industrial farms has got to change.
If anything was working very well, we would have more people farming. We have 0.75% of the population farming now.
The Berries hope to encourage more young people to farm on mid-sized parcels of land that produce locally grown products for local markets. Farms that emphasize soil conservation and depend less on chemical fertilizers and herbicides.
I heard Daddy say recently that big agriculture, industrial agriculture, is in its death throes. It's brain dead and it's just thrashing around now. I think he's right.
In a part of the country where farmers once depended for their income on growing tobacco, a crop in severe decline, Berry program students are researching ways farmers can diversify and are planting new crops that may do well in Kentucky's unique soil. On this 15-acre research farm, students are participating in a government-sponsored program that grows a type of hemp used in making clothing fiber. Sean Lucas teaches soil science.
The soil is not just dirt. You know, it is minerals, organic materials, living roots, living microorganisms, and the more diversity you can get into that system, the healthier your soil is going to be.
The farming program has grown from just one student 2 years ago to 25 now. The students come from urban areas, from farm families, and from as far off as India and Nepal. This student plans to return eventually to his family's grain farm in West Africa.
I think the most attractive thing about this farming program is that it teaches you how to make a productive farm, to create a productive farming system using very basic techniques.
I'm particularly attracted to urban agriculture and meeting the needs of undermet peoples in our urban communities.
He writes in a way that you're sitting on the front porch at the farm with him.
Before enrolling in the program, many of the students had never read Berry's famous poems, stories, and essays on farming, but they can now quote chapter and verse.
I always love his one quote, "What I stand for is what I stand on." And to me, that means a lot because we all walk on this earth, and why are we not taking care of it? And that's something that he tries to convey in his writings, is so that we all can get a passion for the earth and for what we do in everyday life.
Mary Berry says she's thrilled that many of the students want to farm in communities where they were raised. She half-jokingly says the Berry Farming Center offers degrees in, quote, homecoming.
We need to go someplace and dig in. So the concept of homecoming, I think, is simply to take root someplace. Care about a place, not just for a short amount of time, forever.
The Berry family says the program is ultimately trying to recreate the kind of supportive agricultural community that it benefited from through generations of farming.
We were also surrounded by neighbors and friends and family who had known the farm we bought all their lives. So they understood, they knew the mistakes we might make. They'd seen them made. They could advise us. They could give us what no college program could give us.
It is a line of remembering Mary Berry says her family doesn't want to see lost, and one reflected in this poem of her father's on hope.
Find your hope then on the ground under your feet. Your hope of heaven, let it rest on the ground underfoot.
For Religion and Ethics News Weekly, I'm Judy Valente at St. Catherine College in Kentucky.
In Rome this week, thousands of pilgrims have been filing in to view the relics of the hugely popular Saint Padre Pio. The 20th century Capuchin monk was known for his mysticism and the miracles he performed. Pope Francis had asked that the remains of Padre Pio and Saint Leopold Mandic be brought to the Vatican for this Jubilee Year of Mercy. Finally, on our calendar, this coming week marks the Lunar New Year for the Chinese and many other Asian cultures. This will be the year of the monkey. Also this week, Western Christians begin observing Lent, the season of preparation leading up to Easter. On Wednesday, Ash Wednesday, many traditionally receive a mark of ashes as a symbol of penitence and a reminder of human mortality. And that's our program for now. I'm Bob Abernethy. You can follow us on Twitter and Facebook and watch us anytime on the PBS app for iPhones and iPads. There's also much more on our website where you can listen to or watch every program. Join us at pbs.org/religionethics. As we leave you, scenes from lantern festivals kicking off Chinese New Year celebrations.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding also provided by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're your retirement company.
Be more. PBS.